I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Enter for a chance to win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Hello everyone and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host, I'm recording out in Reykjavik, Iceland as always. Been a couple of weeks since the last podcast, I've been out travelling around, I've been in the UK to visit family, took a little break up north in the city of York, and then flew back to Iceland. I'm now set up again, not in my usual home studio. So it's a bit of an on-the-fly setup today, so I hope it sounds okay for you all. But I have got an episode for you. I have been playing a few games. I've been playing a little bit of Europa, a really nice platformer, I guess, with a kind of a linear exploration vibe going on. I've been enjoying that a lot. I've played a little bit of Resident Evil 4 Remake, in keeping with the season as we are around Halloween now. But the main game I've been playing is a little puzzle game called Wilmot Works It Out, a sequel to Wilmot's Warehouse. I really enjoyed that one. I powered through it. I've been playing it on flights here and there, on handheld and so forth. And I think it's a lovely little game, so I'm going to make that one the featured game of this episode. But as I mentioned, I have been playing this one on handheld. And if you're a regular listener of the show, you'll know that my handheld situation took a nosedive recently when I kind of dropped the ROG Ally console that I use for all of my Steam and PC gaming. And both of the sticks stopped working. They stopped working left to right, but they did work up and down. Very strange. I looked it up online. Apparently, it's a common issue that people have with the ROG Ally's sticks. If it takes a little knock, they can just go out of whack and stop working. So I didn't have a Steam machine for a while. I missed the Steam Next Fest because of it, and it was a bit of a pain in the butt. And after going through some customer service, not getting any help, and looking for someone to repair it, funnily enough, no one in Iceland who I called from these various game console repair shops had even heard of an ROG Ally. I decided to do it myself, so I ordered some new sticks on Amazon. I think it was under £10. I got two sticks and I got a little tool set with a couple of little micro screwdrivers, a little crowbar, and a set of tweezers. And with the help of a YouTube video and a very bright spotlight, I actually opened up the Ally, took out the old sticks, disconnected the battery, all of that kind of thing. Put in the new ones, and it is good as new. So really happy to say that you know, that was a £700 device when I first got it. So it would have been a real bummer if a pair of joysticks just stopped it from being usable as a whole. So I'm really happy to have that up and running again. I got it working back in the UK, and I used it to play Wilmot Works It Out while I was away. So yeah, if you've been following the Ally saga that I've been having since I picked that one up, it is back in circulation, back as part of my setup, and I'm really happy to have it back because it is a really good PC handheld, despite all of the palaver that I've been having. And one of the first games that I picked up on it was Europa. This is a game that I talked about a while ago. It was in Steam Next Fest. It is the Studio Ghibli-inspired, wide linear exploration platformer, I would say. Exploration in that the areas that you get to explore aren't just, you know, linear levels, but there isn't a huge amount to see in there. There's a few little buildings dotted here and there that you can go into. There are extra collectibles hidden in hard to reach places, or, you know, just little caves and stuff like that. So you are encouraged to explore, but in no way is it an open world game of any kind. You know, you are going from A to B in this game. It reminds me a little bit of Journey, I would say, except it's set in rolling countryside, where Journey was set in a desert. This one is set in a beautiful countryside with green grass, with water, with white tip waves, with trees everywhere, cliffs. And in this game, you are playing as a little robot boy who is on a journey of his own to try and find the fate of his maker. The maker speaks to you in voiceover as you explore and tells you the story of the human colonization of the moon of Europa. People seem to be gone in the game that you're playing. There are a lot of tumble-down castles, medieval style. So it's a really weird mix of this sort of fantasy journey, this sci-fi setting, this journey-esque platforming, and this Studio Ghibli art style. It's really, really cool. And I was pretty lukewarm on the demo when I played it, but this one has really got its hooks into me, actually. I'm trying to figure out if the controls just got a lot better, because the demo I played about a year ago, and I kind of couldn't get my hang around the boosting, the jetpacking, and all that kind of thing, and found it a bit clunky. But this time when I picked it up, I found it all very intuitive and have been enjoying it a lot. So either they worked out some control scheme kinks, or I was just in a better mood when I played it this time, or in a mood for this kind of game. Either way, I have really, really enjoyed it. There is a really cool little jetpack in it where you can boost up into the air for a short way and then sort of float down to travel pretty far. And like in Journey, walking is the least interesting way to travel in this game. It's all about staying airborne, staying in the air as fast as you can, as long as you can. And as you progress through the game, you can charge up your jetpack more and more with more charges that allow you to fly to some really, really high places. So it's quite an aerial game. I love that sense of freedom. I love that sense of floating through the air. I really like the setting, so I've been really enjoying it. I will keep playing it, and you may well hear me talk about that one again. That's Europa. And before my little Europe trip, I did squeeze in a bit of Resident Evil 4 remake as well. This is, of course, the glossy remake of the much-loved horror classic. I bought it on sale for £30 a long time ago, and I never actually played it. It was just the FOMO. It was up for a lot of Game of the Year awards and that kind of thing, and I was feeling left out not playing it. Finally picked it up, and I've dipped into it. I have played half of the original Resident Evil 4. I kind of tailed off after you meet the president's daughter that you're trying to save. But it's really fun to dive into this remake. It looks absolutely fantastic. It has really funny, dorky dialogue, and it's full of really funny moments. Leon is just such a meathead. All of his dialogue is funny. He's this kind of intentionally camp action man, cop guy, who, you know, the most incredible things will happen, and he will just say, "Whoa, what was that?" Like Keanu Reeves style. He's a really funny character. And as well as the graphical upgrade, there's a lot of other stuff in here too that wasn't there before. There are now stealth kills. You can creep up behind enemies and knife them. You have this knife that's like a hand-to-hand weapon that wasn't in the original game, I believe. And obviously you have a pistol to start, and you get a shotgun and different weapons as you progress. I had just gotten the shotgun in this new playthrough, and it's as satisfying as ever. I will say that I found the way that Leon controls to be a bit of a surprise. I didn't remember this from the original game, but he's very, very weighty in this new game. He moves quite slowly, he turns quite slowly, he aims quite slowly. I mentioned this in the Discord, actually, that I felt that Leon was a bit too weighty, a bit too sluggish, perhaps, in both movement and aiming. People in the Discord said that they don't mind it because the enemies move slow too. But for me, I found it all a little bit stodgy. I missed the more snappy feel of, for example, the Dead Space remake, where your character definitely feels heavy, but is also very, very responsive. So a bit of a stodgy play, but very, very impressive, very funny. I always like that sense of camp that Resident Evil games have. There's lots of jokes in there. It's a pretty schlocky, pretty bloody, pretty fun. So I'm going to carry on with that playthrough as well. That's Resident Evil 4 Remake. I also have a correction that I want to make. In the last episode or the one before, when the ROG Ally console broke, I was testing a game called Rally Drive, and I kind of falsely maligned it and said that it didn't have controller support. I realize now that that was right after I had dropped my ROG Ally console, and that the sticks just weren't working. So Rally Drive does indeed have controller support, and I'm going to play that one again. So very sorry for falsely maligning that game as not having controller support. It was just my own broken handheld. I've also added to the slate Slay the Princess, the Pristine Cut. This is the new release of Slay the Princess, very highly rated indie game from last year that I didn't get around to playing, but people who play it say, you know, it's Game of the Year material. So I've got that on the slate, received a code for that one, and I will be playing that before the year is out. Really looking forward to it. And finally, before we get to that Wilmot Works It Out review, I wanted to say thank you to a couple of new patrons. Thank you very much to Charlotte, and thank you very much to Unknown Skies, both of whom signed up to be Gaming in the Wild patrons in the last couple weeks. For that, they get 14 bonus episodes about music, about travel, about all different kinds of things. They get an invite to our Discord server, where there are loads and loads of people talking games all the time, playing games, playing multiplayer, sharing different puzzles they're doing, sharing recommendations. Really, really good place to talk about games, full of good people. If you're sick of Twitter and, you know, the general gamer internet, this is a really peaceful little garden of Gaming in the Wild patrons. You're welcome to come and join us. It's only $1 a month to join, or more if you would like. A special shout out to the boss tier patrons, Mike Sampier and Hollow, who support the podcast at the top tier. And with that, let's get on with the show with a review of the lovely little indie game, Wilmot Works It Out. So Wilmot Works It Out is a game by Hollow Ponds. This is a London-based studio led by Richard Hogg, the artist, and Ricky Haggett, who does the design and programming. They've made a few other games that you might have heard of, and a few other games that have been featured on the show, such as I Am Dead, the hidden object game published by Annapurna, and Flock, which came out more recently. They also made Wilmot's Warehouse. This was the first Wilmot game. It's a sorting game where you play a little square. You sort out packages in the warehouse and containers and stuff like that. It's really, really charming. I had it recommended to me originally as an example of like crisp economic gaming design, economical, I should say. And I 100% agree with that assessment. It's a simple game, but it's very, very well done. Wilmot Works It Out is a sequel to that game. This is Wilmot at home when he's gone home from the warehouse. He likes to sort things out in his spare time as well. This one's published by Finji and it is Steam only for now. I played it on the ROG Ally. I had a couple of crashes where Wilmot kind of got stuck in stuff. But they were anomalies, and it was pretty clean otherwise. It has a Metacritic score of 79, or roughly 8 out of 10, which seems kind of fine and fair given the scope of the game. I might have liked to see that 79 lean over into the 80s personally, but I think 8 out of 10 is about right. And not just because it's one of my fantasy critic picks, so that score kind of helps out my team, but also because I just really think it's a very, very cool, crisp, well-made, charming little game generally. God is a Geek reviewed it on the high end, giving it a 9 out of 10 and saying it's cozy gaming done right with colourful puzzles to solve and a whole lot of charm. Polygon were a bit more cool on it and said that it's a repetitive, predictable, but comforting game. And if it is possible to say that a game is repetitive and predictable and mean it in a good way, I think this is the right game for that. How Long to Beat has this one at 5.5 hours. My Steam library said that I played it for 7. But I think I left it running a little too often. I kept putting down the controller. And it's a perfect little pick-up and play game. So if you're playing on a handheld, you can have half of your attention on it. You can have one eye on it. It's a soothing puzzle game with no ticking clock, no stress at all. So you can play it in your own time. I was often playing it whilst watching something on TV, or you know, I played it on the plane. Played it whilst watching a movie. And so I would sometimes put down the Ally and go do something else, go make a cup of tea. So I think that 7 hours is a bit long. I probably got it at about 6. And the developers described this one by saying, Wilmot Works It Out is a puzzle building game about completing beautiful images and using them to decorate the walls of your home. I have to say about this one, it's a deeply relaxing puzzle game about doing multiple jigsaws all at once. It has a tight core concept, light, playful story, and a lot of charm. But as for the overview of what this game is, you play as Wilmot. He's just a little white square on the screen. He has a face sketched on him. His face changes expression based on what's going on. He has a really funny idle animation, actually, where you look away from the screen, you look back, and he's thinking really hard about the puzzle. And Wilmot is really, really into puzzles. He's a part of a puzzle club, which means that every day there is a knock at the door, and it's the postman. They will give you a few lines of dialogue. They will chat to you, maybe about the weather, maybe about what's happening outside. Then they'll drop off your puzzle club box for the day and leave. When you have your box, you go back in the house, you hit X to open the parcel, and a grid of jumbled up squares will appear on the floor. It's up to you to separate them, to pull them out, to look at them, to try and figure out how they fit together. They're like jigsaw pieces, but without the knobbly connector bits. So it's just like a little sliding block puzzle, really, but you can just move them around. So unlike a jigsaw, because you don't have to figure out the edges first, rather than looking for straight edges and corners like you might with a real jigsaw, you start off by trying to see some distinguishing features or distinctive patterns on a piece, looking for another piece that has something a little bit like that, and then trying to see if they fit together. And this starts off simple at first. You can kind of get a rough idea of what the image might be just by scanning your eyes over the pieces. Maybe it's a beach scene and you can recognize a bit of sand. You can see a bit of a beach umbrella. You can see someone walking. And if you can see someone walking split across two tiles, you put them together. And you might be able to see a bit of sun, sand, waves, and the image comes together really quickly. And to actually put it together, Wilmot can pick up any square. If you go up to a square, push towards it and press X, he can push them manually. So if you push left against a square, it will just, you know, inch to the right bit by bit. But you can also pick them up. You can pick up one square at a time, or you can pick up many. There's a little sort of system for pressing or holding the button, selecting the different pieces around you that you want to pick up, ferrying them around, slotting them into place. And sometimes you end up with, you know, almost a square, but a central piece is missing. So you have to kind of maneuver into it and drop the right piece right into the center. And something that I really like is that when you've put a piece into the right place, it will magnetize to the pieces next to it. So you can always tell when the piece is right because they click together really satisfyingly. You can then maneuver the pieces that have magnetically clicked together as a whole. So you can pick up your half-finished jigsaw and move it around the play area if you need to. And this all feels really natural and good. I really like the camera viewpoint in this game. You're looking down at Wilmot's house. You're looking down towards the floor. So it all sort of makes sense that you are arranging these pieces on the floor of the house. The clicking together of the pieces is really, really satisfying. It helps you to know that you're on the right track. Wilmot's movement feels really good too. Picking up and dropping pieces just feels great generally. I think it rests on that because by the end, you're doing things pretty rapidly. So the controls have to be slick. And I think the fact that this all feels very natural and good is deceptively simple to achieve, actually, the same way that, you know, Apple's it just works mentality, where you pick up an iPhone, and it's fairly easy to get it going. Same with easy to pair it with your computer, easy to pop in your Apple Bluetooth headphones, and everything just starts working together most of the time. It's actually like obviously this monumental effort in UI design that made it that way. And this game's a bit like that. Like everything in it just works, but it's deceptively simple. I think that the fact that the movement works, the fact that the little UI for picking up various pieces, dropping them, for picking up a whole block full of pieces and separating out one that you need to pull out is all very, very well done. And I think it's taken a lot of effort to get there, and it's really paid off because it's a very smooth experience. So shout out to HoloPons for making everything feel so effortless in this game. It really does contribute to the calmness of it all. If you were getting frustratingly bogged down in trying to remember the controls all the time, it would definitely detract from the calming feel of this game. It is a very therapeutic, calm, chill game. It really is a pleasure in that way. It kind of keeps your mind busy, but not too busy. You're just putting jigsaws together, but it's also very enjoyable. It's enough of a challenge trying to figure out what the images are and so forth. And they do get more complicated as time goes on. So the whole package is just really, really slick and well put together in a way that I really enjoyed. So when you finish a puzzle, you get the complete image. You then get to see the name of it, and then you can hang it on your wall. And you might be rattling through puzzles pretty quickly. They vary from, you know, just 4 or 6 pieces through to, you know, 20 plus. So you get big ones, you get small ones. You hang them on the wall. You can arrange them onto your wall, and then the door will knock. It's the postman again, and they're bringing you the next Puzzle Club game. So it's a really nice, concise little game loop. You get a little bit of chat from the postman every time. You get to put your puzzles together. You get to hang them, arrange them onto the wall. When you finish the wall, a new room will open up. So there's a really nice progression to it. It's just very, very cool. Wilmot really does work it out in this game. The gameplay is really simple. It does introduce a few wrinkles to keep things interesting. The images get more complex and abstract as you go. Sometimes you can't really tell what the images are until they're almost finished, giving you some lovely aha moments when it all comes together. And you might be working on what seem to be separate puzzles at the same time. You might get a jumbled up set of pieces in a box that don't seem to fit together, and then you realize that they it's two separate images that you're working on. So you end up sorting out pieces, putting them in different parts of the room, and then figuring it out as you go. Sometimes puzzles are only finishable across several deliveries. So there's some that you'll be working on for quite a while, just waiting for those extra pieces, which makes it extra satisfying when they fall out of a box and you know you can finish off whatever you've been working on. The images sometimes also are quite disparate. So if there is, for example, someone who is sitting on a bus, you might have some close objects like their Walkman, their newspaper, and then you might be working on something else that looks like a cityscape at the same time. And then some point you realize that they are part of the same image, that you're seeing someone look out of a bus window. So the cityscape and the close still life fit together. You click them together, and that's really, really satisfying every time. There is also a little story here. You get the meta story of Wilmot's relationship with this post person. She rocks up every single day and she has a little chat. She's in Puzzle Club 2. She's a funny character, actually. She only says 3 or 4 lines every day, but you really do get to like her. She's a few days behind Wilmot, so she's describing puzzles that you've done that she's been struggling with. She'll tell you about her job. She'll tell you about her, you know, what's happening in the yard, cats and foxes and birds. She'll talk about the weather. Sometimes it's raining and she's dripping wet and sad. She might tell you about your neighbor's ever-expanding car collection. So there's all these little subplots of what's happening outside the door. And I really enjoyed that. It added a lot of color to it. Eventually, she seems to become friends with Wilmot. You can never quite tell if she's just like a oversharing, busybody-ish person, or if her and Wilmot are actually becoming friends. And so it's nice how that resolves at the end of the game. It gave a little arc to the whole thing. So as you're putting your puzzles together, you're also being told a little story. Very, very charming. As for the look and feel of the game, I mean, it has a very fresh look. It's very simple. It's line drawn. If you've seen any of Richard Hogg's other games, you'll know his style. It is simple, but very, very cool. It has this sort of Kath Kidson-y illustrator thing going on. There is some basic customization here and there, so you can change the wallpaper in your rooms. You can change the frames on your pictures. So the look of it is, you know, good enough. Very, very simple, very, very concise, like the whole game, really. The soundtrack is great, too. It is by Ellie Rainsbury. It is this lovely, mellow, jazzy, electronica kind of thing, with very cute and satisfying sounds, too. Lots of pops and clicks and door knocks as you're putting your pieces together. I really liked the audiovisual presentation of this. It did exactly what it had to do. And there are 60 puzzles in total, so there's quite a lot to do. It did take me six and a half hours or something. I played it across 5 or 6 sessions. I played it on a flight. I played it watching a game. I really enjoyed picking it up and playing it whenever. It's just a really nice distraction in a mobile gamey kind of way. But I found this one to be absolutely delightful, honestly. I'm really hoping that they add more puzzles to it. When I finally did finish that last puzzle, it was satisfying to see the credits roll, but I was also a little bit sad. There is another mode called Marathon Mode, where you get to open box after box after box and work in a bigger room. I haven't really given that one a spin yet, but I may well do so. But I would have played this game for longer. I would have played it all the way to the end if it was twice as long. It was a very distracting game that was just real pleasure. You know, it's not like you have to concentrate on it fully, but it has enough charm to keep you amused, to keep you into it. So as for the good points and the bad points, mostly good, honestly. It's a beautifully designed game. It is very, very crisp. It is simple. It's well put together. Everything works how it should. The mechanics are all great. I love how easy it is to pick up pieces and manipulate them. It feels very intuitive and well done. That wasn't a given, given that you're ferrying around pieces, connecting things together. The magnetic click works really well. You can shake a piece out if you need to really easily. All of the controls just feel great. The mechanics feel really intuitive, I would say. I really like the look. I really like the sound. Everything just feels well judged. There's a sort of a confidence to the design of this game, to its look, to its sound, to its story, to its gameplay. They are trusting that people will enjoy this simple little game. And I really, really did. So I think that the correct decision-making, or the good decision-making in this game, in terms of the scoping of it and where the effort has gone, just feels good. Like, these people know what they are doing. And I think that permeates the whole experience. I really like the mounting complexity of the puzzles. There's some really good fake outs where you see something that looks like, for example, the cap of a mushroom, and something else where the dots are a little strange and you're trying to piece them all together. And it might turn out that they belong to two totally different images that have a similar pattern, and it's actually a fake out. So there's some nice little complex moments where you'll furrow your brow just a little, but it's never too hard. It never gets frustrating. It might just take a little trial and error. Maybe you have to wait for a new box for it all to become clear. I really enjoyed the light story too, and I felt that it was a satisfying length. It ended well, even if it did leave me wanting more. I think that's a good thing, right? As for the bad stuff, I mean, I only have one very minor quibble. I almost have no notes here. When you are organizing pictures onto the wall, they seem to snap onto a grid. And if you are a fan of organizing games, you will know that you need things just so. Like, you might want a certain amount of distance between your images, or a certain amount of a distance between skirting boards or door frames and where you're hanging your images. There's a level of precision that I think most people feel about this kind of thing, whether it's in real life or in the game. I felt like the snap lines didn't quite work for me. Like, I couldn't ever seem to quite get a picture where I wanted it to be. I wish that I had more free control and they weren't snapping so much. So I never quite 100% felt happy with my wall arrangements. But honestly, that's such a minor quibble, and it's just one small part of the game that you play for a few seconds between puzzles. So really, it doesn't really matter at all. Other than that, I would say this is a perfect little game, honestly. I have no further notes. This is a really, really good one. It's just a small game, you know. Not everything has to be like a sprawling epic or, you know, creatively ambitious in such a big way. It's just a game that is made with a love of the medium and with a really good sensibility, a really good eye for detail. I had a fantastic time with it. I really do recommend that you try it out. It's only on Steam for now, I believe, but I'm sure it'll be on Switch and everything eventually. That's Wilmot Works It Out. So that's our episode for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. I hope the sound is okay. I'm using an unusual pair of headphones that I don't normally use, so I'm going to have to go and EQ this one, make sure it sounds okay for you. I hope that it's not too echoey or anything like that. I'm in a room that I don't normally use, so a bit of an unusual audio circumstance today. And I know it's been a couple of weeks since the last episode, but yeah, I've been moving around a lot. I'm hoping to get my apartment finished up and get back into my home studio as soon as possible, hopefully tomorrow. If that is the case, I'll be back soon with another episode. I've got one planned, looking at all of the games that are coming out this month. So the November month ahead episode is coming up. I'm also playing Europa. I'm also planning to finish Arco. I have not given up on that one. You know, a lot of times when you finish a game, it will just sink into the backlog and you kind of forget about it and move on. That has not happened with Arco. It's still in my mind. And now that the ROG Ally is up and running again, I've got no excuses. I was right on the final chapter of that game, and I want to play it before Games of the Year season. That's how good it is. Same goes for Flintlock, actually. Flintlock the Siege of Dawn, another game that I was kind of lukewarm on when I first saw it and wasn't planning to play. Played it a little bit, absolutely love it, and I really have to finish that game before Games of the Year season. I want to see how it all stacks up. I guess we are in the last couple of months of the year now, and we are getting to that time. Only eight weeks left or so before, you know, Games of the Year season is here, Christmas is here. I'm really looking forward to that, having guests on the show, hearing about all their favourite games of the year. I've got some really good people lined up, some people whose voices you will recognise, and hopefully some new voices too. And just before I sign off, let me mention the Patreon once more. Big thank you to Hollow, big thank you to Mike Sampier, big thank you to all the patrons. They got a new patron-only episode recently. It was a radio show of tracks that I find particularly inspiring. There was some electronica on there, some indie music on there, some shoegazy stuff on there. So it's like a radio show where I talk through 10 different tracks that have meant a lot to me. If you would like to hear that, if you're into alternative music and you like a bit of a radio show style presentation, it's patreon.com/gamingintheWild to get access to that and to all of the other patron episodes. So that is an option for you, and there's a link in the description if you'd like to join up. But that's it for this show, so take care of yourselves and each other, and bye-bye for now.